At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, March 20th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and we are here to help you become a better investor. That's what this show is about. And to that end, we have Luke back with us, who I know is still amped up for InvestTalk Market Madness. Isn't that right?
You know me. I'm consistently hyped about these matchups day after day.
And this is your first, well, I guess your second day in your 30s. Yesterday was your birthday. I we didn't really talk about it, but how does it feel?
It feels one day different than yesterday did, I would say.
I loved your comment that you woke up feeling like you wanted to yell at
tell somebody
kids
to get off my lawn.
Yeah, to get off your lawn. Yeah. Did you do that today?
I don't have a lawn, so no, I did not tell anybody to get off my imaginary lawn.
There we go. Well, hopefully we can nonetheless help guide our listeners to better financial education so that they can make better decisions with their money. That's what this show is really about, and we do that by answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you actionable and educational material so that you can learn a lesson or two. Sometimes you have to learn a lesson the hard way, hopefully the easy way, by just listening to professionals like us who do this every day and have heard all the mistakes that the average person has made time and time again throughout time. And that's something we continue to strive for, is to educate you as much as possible. Now, before we get into what we are talking about as a whole today, we're going to touch on the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Today was the second day of the first round, and we are going to highlight the top eight matchups. I'm not going to list them off, but we'll list them later as we go through. But today's winners in the old economy region of round one were Southern Copper, Sinclair, CE, which one's CE next? I just have the symbol. Century Aluminum, there we go. PR, which is the Permian Resource Corporation, OVV, Aventiv, CNM, which is Core in Maine, and then
Powerhouse.
Lennox. Like Powerhouse, yep. We talked about that one yesterday. And Lennox and Eaton. Eaton outperformed the GE, took the win on the day, up pretty big. So those are the winners for today's first round, and we have the consumer region coming up tomorrow, so we'll be previewing those matchups a little bit later. Now, to ensure you're in the loop, make sure you download the InvestTalk podcast each day for our in-depth analysis and daily results in our inaugural InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Now, with that said, we're going to talk about the market performance today and run down some show topics, but as usual, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Luke. This is Bruce from New York. I have a large gain in One OK or ONEO, symbol OKE. It is a small part of my overall portfolio. This is on a very nice run. I was wondering what you thought was a fair value of the stock. Please send my best to Steve. Thank you.
All right. Looking at One OK, and this is a name that we've owned for clients for some time. And you're right. It's a nice gain. Got a 52-week high today, around nearly $79 per share. Our value is in the 90s, so I don't see any reason why you want to trim now. As I've been saying over the past week plus, that we are just starting this rotation into the more cyclical parts of the economy. And for ONEOK, they're a midstream natural gas transporter. And so as the cyclicality of the economy kicks up and cyclical companies do well, they're in the heart of that because their natural gas are powering power plants and industrial facilities, et cetera. And there's a lot of natural gas flowing out of the shale regions of this country. So I see no reason to trim it. Do you, Luke?
I tend to agree. They have had 5% annualized growth in terms of their earnings per share over the past 5 years. Fundamentally, it's a strong company. Their cash flow is improving. Their profitability is improving. Their margins are improving. They really don't have much debt to speak of. They have a decent amount of cash on their balance sheet. But overall, it's still pretty fairly priced. It's priced to book as a 2.8, which is significantly lower than its five-year average of 3.9, and overall just a reasonable valuation multiple to begin with. Now, I always caveat that with, if you're overexposed to anything, regardless of how well it's doing, you should certainly think about trimming down just for a risk perspective. But if you're just thinking about trimming because you've had some gains, I think this still has some room to run.
Yeah, I think he said it was a small part of his portfolio, so it doesn't sound like he's overweight. All right, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is in regards to nuclear power and how it can potentially decarbonize the oil and gas industry, as well as the mining industry, which is underappreciated when it comes to the amount of energy is needed to pull things like battery metals out of the ground. So we're going to touch on the oil and gas industry, nuclear power, and small nuclear modular reactors. Okay, so that's what's on the docket for us. We also want to talk about the Fed meeting that was today and the Bank of Japan and their landmark decision yesterday to get off the zero bound. So we're going to touch on that those topics, as well as highlight tomorrow's matchups for the InvestTalk Market Madness and your voice bank questions. One is on buying options, and the other is on OMAB. That is a Mexican airport operator. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART. But we're going into a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today, Luke. It was Fed Day, and the Fed certainly came in more dovish than the market had anticipated. The dollar was down big on the news that the Fed is still planning on 3 rate cuts this year, even though they paused for the first 2 meetings this year. They're basically still saying every other meeting going forward will be a rate cut, despite the slight acceleration in inflation to start the year. They still see the economy being weak enough for them to warrant rate cuts as we go along. So that was more dovish than the market had expected, and the market reacted accordingly. So what was your interpretation of the news?
Yeah, well, certainly there's a rally going into the end of the day after the Fed meeting and after Chair Powell's discussion and answering of questions. Big tech was broadly higher. Small caps did really well. The Russell 2000 was up almost 2%. I think overall, like you mentioned, the big takeaway was that the median dot plot didn't change. They still expect there to be 3 rate cuts this year. And even though there was some discussion about the neutral rate changing, the long run dot only went up about 10 basis points, so not a big change overall. So that combined with the kind of more bullish than expected forecast for economic growth really drove the market broadly higher.
Yeah, and I think that that move in the dollar is always the big tell for me. What is the dollar reaction? Because that the dollar plays into pretty much every market. So you can kind of get anomalies and when it comes to the reaction from the Fed, but the dollar is such an important driver to the global financial system that what that does is to me the really true tell. And so that's what I saw was that dovish tilt here, the 10-year down about 2.5 basis points after a decent rally. So, you know, I expect near term the market should remain relatively buoyant based on this news. Now, you could have a turnaround. I could easily see the Fed come out, or the Fed governors who always have speaking engagements and things like that. And oftentimes what the Fed does is say, okay, maybe they don't like the market reaction. And I could easily see them saying, no, we don't want the market to feel like this is more dovish, for financial conditions to loosen even more. They often go out there and speak hawkishly to kind of counter it. So it would not shock me to see something like that. But the reaction today helped those small caps who tend to be more levered. And so if the financial conditions ease, well, that means less chance of defaults. You saw credit spreads tighten once again from already tight levels. So the credit markets really liked what they saw, and equity markets liked what they saw as well. Now, this is InvestTalk with 58 million downloads. So let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk, I got a question for you guys. Looking to see if you could give some feedback on whether, when you purchase options, the fee that goes into the contract to your brokerage, does that count towards your capital gains? And so essentially, like, you know, if you bought one contract and it was 65 cents, you got to pay your brokerage. Does that 65 cents get removed from the capital gains, or are you paying taxes on your full profit with that not being factored in? It looks like when you do purchase it, it does give you a max profit potential, and it looks like it factors in that contract price. But I was just curious, because if you start trading options and you buy, you know, for example, 80 contracts, then it becomes, you know, kind of expensive. And I feel like that should be factored into that trade decision. So I know it's kind of a tax question, but if you guys have some insight on that, that'd be awesome. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Yeah, really simple. Yeah, it's going to count towards your cost basis and the cost of investing. So yeah, that is something you can write off on your potential gain. And so while the system might not account for it, the tax person should. The amount, and I know a lot of people aren't used to it these days, right? You're used to trade equities, pay some sort of commission ticket. Now you don't do that, but on the option side, you still do. And that certainly counts towards your cost basis. Now let's grab another caller question now.
Hey, big fan of InvestTalk. I just have a quick question about averaging into a already owned stock. I own VTI, and it skyrocketed soon after I got an initial position. I have about $4,000 on the sideline. Is it better to wait for it to fall back down, or is it better to just throw money and invest in it rather than have it sit on the sidelines? Thank you.
Well, if you're dollar cost averaging, it shouldn't matter, right? The whole point of dollar cost averaging is that as things go up in value, you're buying the same amount and you're buying less as it, when it goes up, and you're buying even more when it goes down. So, and the numbers always bear out, because over time, asset prices go up, that it's better to get the money in sooner rather than later, especially in a time of, especially in an inflationary environment. Because overall profits for companies tend to go up, earnings go up, and thus the value of those stocks go up as well to a similar degree. So you know, a lot of people, the psychology of investing messes with them. They say, okay, I paid this much, I don't want to pay more now. But the reality is, it's actually better. You're putting good money after good. Most people do the opposite. They want to buy things that are cheaper, and often that means they're buying weak assets, weak stocks, etc. Anything to add?
No, just generally speaking, historically, empirically, if you look at the data, you actually have a positive excess return and one of the best excess returns by investing on all-time high today. So that's an interesting thing people don't consider.
Yeah, people think all-time highs are bad and bad buying opportunities. In fact, they're good buying opportunities. Now, let me alert you of the new InvestTalk Classroom episode about the Bitcoin ETFs. It's our latest InvestTalk Classroom, which we posted on our YouTube channel. So head over there and search InvestTalk Classroom. And the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today concerns this question: can nuclear power decarbonize the oil and gas industry? And that's something that is certainly underappreciated about the energy industry, is just how much energy is needed to actually pull the fossil fuels out of the ground, whether that's oil or gas. And the same can be said when you're talking about battery metals, all the metals that are needed to go into the green revolution, EV cars, etc. And all of that takes fossil fuels typically, because these are in remote regions, means that it's very hard for them to get electrical power ran to them. So they run off of large machineries and large machinery that that powers these particular drilling stations and mines, right? And so what a lot of companies are now doing is thinking about deploying micro reactors and small modular reactors to deliver power to these sites. And many governments and private companies are investing in the acceleration of this technology. So Luke, I think this is underappreciated. Everyone's talking about the need for nuclear around the world and strong baseload power and the fact that it doesn't produce any carbon. But there are other applications than just these huge monoliths of nuclear power stations around the country. These SMRs can also be a solution as well.
No, they certainly can. And I think it gets past the main barrier of adding nuclear as an important part of the power grid. And that is, a lot of people are scared of it. And that's because some of the few incidents that have occurred certainly have been frightening. The technology's gotten better. But for some reason, well, understandably, people don't want those types of things built in their backyard. So one way to incorporate them into the grid, which is interesting, is incorporating them, like you've been talking about, into the production capacity of other types of energies. So I think that's certainly a good strategy going forward. I think you and I talk a lot about how you can live in an ideological world where you think everything should be, all vehicles should be electric immediately, and we should immediately be on solar wind power, but everything has a cost, right? And so it has to be a combination of things based upon the general cost at certain times of day of generating that energy, and what is it actually pulling out of the ground, a whole bunch of factors. So incorporating nuclear in multiple steps along the chain, rather than just as nuclear power stations, those massive stations, closer to populations, is certainly an interesting way to go.
And you have to be flexible. And I think that's one issue I have with the push towards these green projects, is that there's a lot of dogma involved in thinking that it has to be wind or solar or hydrogen it's the only way forward. And there are other ways that are incremental improvements. Just think of what's happened with coal. A lot of coal use has been curbed by using more natural gas, which certainly isn't certainly isn't zero carbon, but it definitely is better than burning coal, right? And so what's happening in Europe is a lot of those countries that are trying to become greener, they've actually returned to coal burning because instead of building out better baseload power, either with nuclear or with natural gas, they went with wind and solar. And we know that can ebb and flow with the wind and the sun. And so they've in some instances have actually gone backwards and actually used more coal. So I think finding ways to deploy these SMRs in multiple applications will be a huge way to reduce fossil fuel demand. Now, oil and gas production, transport, and processing contribute around 15% of all energy-related greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. So this isn't a small amount of use of fossil fuels. This is, you know, in the teens, right? Mid-teens, which is just significant. Whereas oil and gas accounts for roughly 40% of all emissions. And so this is about a third, right, of the emissions that come from oil and gas. So it'll be very interesting to see how these companies, especially the large companies, deploy these facilities. I don't know if you know, saw this, but Amazon just bought a nuclear reactor to power some of the data centers because they want. Where was it? I forget what state it was in. But I know they did that to help power some of their data centers. So I think these big companies are waking up.
It's an interesting thing because when you think about it, right, what's the big secular theme that's been growing the market, right? It's been AI. And people talk about AI, but they don't talk about the energy costs of AI. If you expect artificial intelligence and computing to power the economy deep into this century, you have to power it some way. Right? So you have to solve the energy issue, which is another reason why energy is a great thing to get into at this point in time, is because as AI and artificial intelligence and computing becomes more important for not just tech businesses, but all businesses, they're going to have to power it somehow. It's expensive.
Yep. And looks like it was in Pennsylvania. They bought the Talen Energy Data Center campus at a nuclear power station in Pennsylvania. So this is, I think, just the start of the trend and why we're so bullish on uranium. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Can you protect your portfolio against bond price drops? That requires perspective, and index funds are not a default option, as in many other asset classes. That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we are ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, thanks for your show. It's fantastic. This is Marlo from the New York City area. Wishing Steve well as well. A quick question for you on ticker symbol OMAB. It's a Mexican airport, and I'm looking at it as a long-term investment. I see the debt is going up, but I know they're investing in terminals, and I know you guys are bullish on the Mexican economy long-term like I am. It looks like it's about to bottom out. Got a high dividend yield. Not that I'm buying it for that, but that's attractive. It's trading at a low multiple of cash flow. Just seems like a good price for a good long-term investment. So wanted to know your thoughts. Thanks a lot, and I'll listen to your answer on the show.
All right, looking at OMAB, which is Grupo Aeroportuario del Centro Norte. And this is an airport operator. Thank you, Luke. Appreciate that. As this airport operator, mainly in Monterrey, Mexico. And you're right. We are bullish on the Mexican economy. And earnings for this year expected to grow dramatically. Only earned 36 cents last year. Supposed to make $5.75 this year. But those earnings trends are headed lower. What are you seeing, Luke, on the debt picture as the caller talked about?
I don't see too much or too egregious debt. It looks like it's got $642 million of debt on a $3 billion market cap company, and it really hasn't increased that much over the past couple years. So I don't really think that's a huge concern. In terms of this investment specifically, and I guess I'm not sure how it compares relative to other airport companies within Mexico, the average daily volume is pretty low, actually. The 30-day average volume is 40,000 shares. So this could be one of those situations where maybe spikes in volume have outsized effects on price movements. You saw that towards the end of September when there's a huge sell-off, and that kind of skewed that volume for that time period as well. I do like the idea, though. Right? The cash flow is improving, profitability is improving. If the Mexican economy as a whole has outsized growth relative to other economies, airports are going to be a big part of it, right? It's how tourism comes. It's how freight comes. It's one of the biggest transportation for not just people, but also business. So I do like the idea. I'm not sure about alternative airports to invest in, but overall, I don't hate the business.
Yeah, I just don't like the trends in sales and earnings. It has been growing pretty dramatically, except for last quarter, revenue only grew 16% year over year. A year ago, it was growing 40 to 60% year over year. Earnings are still going up, but estimates for this year in the first quarter and second and third quarter are negative as well, and the earnings trends are negative. And the chart is below all the major moving averages after that fall in September. So, you know, it hasn't really got off the mat. Technically, you know, it is making a higher low here on a weekly, which is good. But I just think you have better opportunities in Mexico. So I'd rather have something kind of a positive earnings trend picture as opposed to a negative one. So for that, I would move on to a different name. All right, now let's go over to our matchups for tomorrow's Invest Talk Market Madness round one in the consumer region. And we're starting off with Charter Communications versus Toledo. Metler Toledo. There we go. And Charter Communications is a large cap cable and ISP company. ISP is internet service provider. They have a lot of debt, no dividend. And this is a combination of Charter, Time Warner, and Bright House. Slow revenue growth, declining profits, and near-term bullish consolidation, though, in the midst of a downturn. So I think it's a decent setup tomorrow because there's a micro-bullish setup, especially with the Fed being dovish. That's good for companies that have a lot of debt. Market tends to like that. What about MTD, Luke?
Yeah, MTD is a company that manufactures weighting instruments for industrial and lab use. It's a decent company. Its cash flow is improving. Profitability looks pretty good. It's had quite a run-up. It looks like it's also supposed to earn about $4 more, up to $40 per share this year relative to $35 per share last year. So in terms of the past 5, 6, 7 months, the chart's certainly been improving technically, as has the business. I think that although this has been better from a momentum perspective over the past 3 months, I think the drop-off even on Fed Day and Charter probably sets it up better tomorrow for the potential to have a one-day outperformance. Remember, we're talking about one day here. So I think I would go with Charter on this.
I'm going to go with MTD. I think the uptrend, it's in an uptrend. It also has a micro bullish pattern. I'll go with MTD on that one, but we shall see. The next one is Urban Outfitters versus Waters Corp. And Urban Outfitters, for everyone that shops regularly, you know, they are a mid-cap retailer, steady growth and profitability, no debt, great cash flow, and in a strong uptrend. Nice setup for tomorrow. What about Waters?
Unsurprisingly, Waters Corp has workflow solutions that involve water in chromatography, spectrometry, thermal analysis, and it's been doing pretty decently. Year to date, it's up 5-6%, though it's underperforming the market. Past 52 weeks, it's up 15%, so underperforming the S&P 500 there as well. But its strength has been improving over the past couple months. But I think I'm probably going to have to go with Urban Outfitters on this. It's been performing better over the 3 month time horizon. I would expect in a one day matchup, Urban Outfitters to do better.
Urban definitely has a bit more better momentum, but Waters has pretty good momentum too. I think the reason it's not up a ton this year is it came into the year pretty overbought. So it had a pullback to start the year and it's been in an uptrend ever since. So it just recently hit the 20-day moving average. I think it's nice setup nicely. I'm going to go with Waters tomorrow, but we shall see once again. The next one is the Gap. The Gap versus Western Union. And the Gap, for most people know who the Gap is, mid-cap retailer, so it's not a huge company anymore. But this is the Gap, Old Navy, Banana Republic. And what's really boosting them is Athleta, which is a yoga active apparel brand. And great balance sheet. Good cash flow, rising cash flows, powerful chart with good momentum and high short interest. So I think momentum could continue into tomorrow. What about Western Union?
Yeah, Western Union, it's a money transfer company. I think it probably had a lot more prominence before the age of the internet. So it's a $4 billion market cap company. Its cash flow has been all over the place. Its profitability has been falling. It's supposed to earn just what it earned last year at the end of this year. It's been buying back shares, which is good, and its earnings have been consistently upgraded over the past 3 months. But in terms of the one-day matchup, I think I'm going to have to go with Gap.
Yeah, Gap's momentum is very, very strong. Now, a similar name with good momentum is Lululemon. That is our next matchup, and that is versus Apollo Global Management. And Lulu is a name that has high profit margins, but also trading at high multiple as well, about 40 times forward-looking earnings, no debt, however, and in an uptrend, just completed a bit of a pullback, a nice bullish setup, I think, heading into tomorrow. What about Apollo?
Yeah, Apollo Global Management, it's an investment management company really known for its private equity arm. You know, over the past year, it's had great returns. It's up almost 100%. Its cash flow has been fantastic. Its profitability has been improving. It's been strong for quite some time. And it has relatively low debt for its size, $8 billion on an $80 billion company. It's been really strong over the past year as the market starts to float, as everybody knows. Generally, fees are calculated relative to AUM. Rally keeps going. I'm going to have to go with Apollo on this one.
Yeah, this one's tough. Both are in with some strong momentum. I'll go with Lulu just to be a little different. Obviously, we don't have skin in the game, but hopefully our listeners do, because right, one of them's going to win the grand prize of $1,000. So those are the first four sets of matchups. We'll get to the rest later in the show, but let's go talk to Mark in New York City looking at LVMUY, which I believe, yep, is Louis Vuitton, Moet. You own it or looking to buy it?
Looking to buy it. Appreciate what you guys do, recent listener, and just wondering if now's a good opportunity to get it at this price point. Thanks.
Sure. Now, Louis Vuitton owns a lot of brands, a lot of high-end brands from Bulgari, Fendi, Givenchy, Tag Heuer? I always forget how to say that one. Hennessy, Moet.
Tiffany.
Glenmorangie, Sephora, Benefit. So it's one of the most successful luxury brands in the world. Pulled back pretty dramatically near the end of last year from a high of about $200 per share. Pulled back all the way to $137 and change. Now we're back up to $186. Down big yesterday. Snap back up today near the highs of yesterday. What are you seeing on earnings trends, Luke?
Yeah, in terms of earnings, it looks like they're pretty flat over the past 6 months in terms of what the expectation is, though this year it's supposed to earn $7, whereas last year it earned $6.50. Next year it may even earn up to $8. For me, just generally speaking, on a relative multiple basis, it's kind of expensive. Price to book 6.6 relative to its five-year average of 6.7. Its forward-looking price to earnings is around 25, which isn't egregiously expensive. I think probably a lot of the pop today was a result of the stronger growth forecast coming out of the Fed, right? These are luxury brands. If the market is doing well because the economy is doing well, then this company is going to do well. So I don't know. This is a tough one. It's a great company. It owns some of the most recognizable brands, but just given its relative price at the moment, it seems to me like it's ripe for a little bit of a pullback.
Yeah, and their business, their cash flow has certainly decelerated from mid-2021 when everybody and their mother had cash in their pocket and they were going to buy all those luxury goods. And so it kind of front-loaded a lot of their earnings. They had free cash flow in mid-2021 of $18.6 billion. Now, trailing 12 months, it's down to $11.5 billion, which is still very nice. And, you know, if we didn't have that COVID bump, it'd probably be at an all-time high. But my question is, what about China? China has been a big driver of their growth and earnings. And if their economy continues to struggle and their consumer continues to struggle with housing prices falling and many companies moving manufacturing away from China, I think that's going to hurt them. So I agree with you. It's not a great time, I think, to be getting into LVMH. I'd be patient on it. Certainly should be on your watch list because it is a very quality business with great brands, but at these prices and the earnings trends, I would stay away. Thanks for the call. Now, let's talk a bit about the Bank of Japan, Luke, which yesterday they announced the end of an era. They raised their key interest rate benchmark for the first time since 2007, 17 years, from minus 0.1 to between 0 and 0.1. So don't be rushing out and going to buy JGBs. You're certainly not going to be impressed by that yield, but they're the last ones to get off the zero bound or the negative bound. I guess they're still on the zero bound. I still call 0 to 0.1 the zero bound, but they're off the negative bound. And you know, this is mainly happening is because the yen has been in a free fall over the past couple of years as central banks around the world that are not named the Bank of Japan, have been raising rates. And what happens is money tends to flow where it's treated best and it's paid the best interest. And when that's not happening in Japan, money flows out of the yen and into other currencies. So, and that has pushed the inflation in Japan above the bank's target of for 22 straight months. And so they finally are off the negative rate policy. What does this tell you about the trends in global markets, Luke?
Yeah, well, you know, I think what I recall is, and Secretary Yellen apologized for it, calling inflation transitory, which I'm of the opinion that inflation was transitory. They're just wrong about the time frame, right? Like a lot of it was a result of supply chain constraints. And so that's starting to fade. I think for Japan specifically, it's important to note that this isn't, and the Bank of Japan even said it, just because we're getting rid of yield curve control, which is a monumental step for their economy, it doesn't mean they're going to have a drastic rate hiking cycle. I think probably from investors' perspective with their recency bias, they think of hiking rates and they think of, well, we did in the United States. So this is not going to happen in Japan. But still, I think it's important. It's important for Japan's place in the world and certainly acknowledgement that inflation was a global issue.
Yeah, and they're feeling as well, and a lot of it is demographics. We know that their demographic situation has been bad for a while, and you know, there's not a lot of immigrants that move to Japan, and that means when older people continue to get older and retire, there's not the young people there to fill the gap, and the wage gains for the average worker is up to 3.8%, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's the highest in three decades. So that's just showing you how much inflation is really surging in Japan. And a lot of it is because the yen is, like I said, just in a free fall. If I pull up a weekly chart, if you ever want to follow the yen, just bring up FXY. It was trading at 91 back in the beginning of 2021. Right now it's at 61. Right, 91 to 61. So the yen has fallen by 33% in a little over 2 years. So that's how impactful it's really been to the Japanese economy and their citizens. So one day maybe we get there, but right now Japan is definitely feeling their amount of debt that they hold in their balance sheet and their poor demographics. Well, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go talk to John in Milpitas. He wants to talk about Boeing, and this is probably the easiest answer I'll ever give. Don't buy it, and okay. If you own it, sell it. That's simple. It? Until management is clean, there's a cleaning house in management, this is a no-touch. This is a company that is rotten to the core. It has major problems, and it's been shown for, you know, the past decade plus. Do not touch this. If you own it, sell
it.
That's simple.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
No problem. All right, let's go to our last set of matchups, and we're going to start off with Red Rocks Casinos Red Rock Resorts versus Equitable Holdings. Now, Red Rocks is a small regional casino operator, volatile earnings history, like a lot of casino names, and the current debt trends or earnings trends are negative, lots of debt, negative cash flow. Chart is in an uptrend, though. But momentum is certainly weakening. What about Equitable Holdings, EQH?
Equitable Holdings is a financial services company, EQH. It's been relatively strong over the past year. It's certainly on an uptrend. Its cash flow has been stagnant, to say the least. Its profitability has not been improving as well. From a momentum perspective, I actually looked at this over the past 3 months. Nearly tied these two. Spot on.
Yeah.
On.
So I'm going to go with Equitable. I like the chart setup.
I'm going to go with Equitable too.
It looks like
coming out of Fed Day too. I'm going to go with Equitable.
Yeah, and the recent momentum I think is accelerating with Equitable versus Red Rocks. I think it's waning. Now H&R Block. I don't think I need to tell you what they do. It's a tax preparer. Strong earnings momentum. Long term risks, however, with potential technology disrupting what they do. But very good cash flow. In an uptrend, bouncing off major support around the 100-day moving average. Kind of like the setup going into tomorrow. What about Vital Farms VITL?
Vital Farms VITL, small company, under a billion, $969 million in market cap. It's a distribution company for eggs and for butter. The past 5 months, the price has shot up from about $10 a share to nearly $23 a share. It's really been powering through. Its cash flow is improving. Its profitability is improving. I think it's going to continue tomorrow.
I say this. I buy their eggs, so they make good eggs. So I like the momentum.
All right,
I'm going to go with Vital. I'm going to go with Vital Farms. Home Depot versus Costco. Two mega behemoths here. But Home Depot, $382 billion market cap. And slowing sales, however, and earnings growth, highly profitable, but still trading at pretty high multiples in a strong uptrend, but approaching some major resistance. So I could easily see a setback tomorrow. What about Costco, COST?
I do not need to tell anybody what Costco does. And if you know me personally, you know that I only shop for food at Costco and eat probably an unhealthy amount of their rotisserie chicken. Not only that, we own Costco for clients, and it's been on quite the tear over the past year. Its momentum doesn't seem to be fading all too much, although it did have a little bit of a drop-off right in the middle of February. I got to go with Costco. I can never
abandon
Costco.
You're never going to bet against Costco. Yeah, you're not going to abandon Costco. I'll go with you on the Costco train here. And let's last but not least is Universal Technical versus Bell Ring Brands. UTI is the symbol for Universal Technical. And what they do is they're a secondary education school around engineering and automotive, small cap, strong earnings momentum, not a lot of debt in an uptrend, but it is losing momentum as of late. I think it could go either way tomorrow. But what about Bell Ring Labs, BRBR?
Bell Ring Brands, Inc. is protein shake company. Over the past year, it's seen its price appreciate from about $33 a share to $60 a share. It's been pretty strong. Its cash flow certainly improved from the middle of last year, and its profitability is improving as well. And it has minimal debt, $865 million worth of debt on an $8 billion market cap company. From a momentum perspective over the past 3 months, though, I think I'm going to have to go with Universal Technical.
Okay. I'll go with Universal Technical as well. It did have that kind of pullback here as of late into that 50-day moving average and had a nice update today, closed on the highs. So I think that gives it momentum into tomorrow. Well, that is the preview for tomorrow's round one matchup in the consumer region for the InvestTalk Market Madness. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And check out each episode now on YouTube with charts, and you get to see our pretty faces. Independent thinking, shared success. It's InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.